Hi everyone, welcome to Type Talks. Today we're here to talk about how INTJs feel misunderstood, both in the type community and also in their personal lives too. And so yeah, I'll have everyone introduce themselves. So Chris, would you like to give a little introduction?
Sure. Chris, I run the YouTube channel Sarah Psych. I'm an INTJ. I've been an MBTI practitioner for quite a few years. I type people, all that sort of stuff.
Rad stuff. And Melissa?
I'm Melissa Harris. I've been working for Personality Hacker during type consultations and as a profiling coach, so teaching other people how to profile. I have a family with four children. I like to play piano and do a bunch of other stuff on the side, but I love this type stuff a lot.
Me too, yeah. All right, so very cool. I'm also going to the live.
I'm Michael. Sorry. No, I thought it sounded like, okay, proceed.
Nice to have you on too, Michael.
Oh, I thought you were moving on. I thought you forgot me, but were you jumping off of what?
Oh, no. Yeah, I was just going to promote Personality.
Go on.
It's okay, Michael. I guess
I thought you were launching into it. Yeah, I read.
Just throw Michael out with the trash.
And Michael's the side person.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And so Melissa is the head profiler at Personality Hacker, and I'll be going to their live event in a week from now. So I highly recommend their training program. I think it's one of the best out there. So feel free to check it out. Personality Hacker is where it's at. And Michael, I don't know if you still want to give an introduction or if your name.
No, that was it. That was it. Yeah, I'll stop.
Yeah, the succinct intros. This is amazing. And so, hi, my name is Joyce, and I'm an MBTI master practitioner, and I facilitate the instrument in organizations. I also type and coach people. All right. And so, INTJs, I'm wondering, what about the type community do people misunderstand about INTJs? And so I think one of the ways in which INTJs are misunderstood in the type community is 16 personalities. So when people are introduced to type, for some people, it is tests like the 16 personalities. Now, a lot of people on that test score INTJ. A lot of people score introvert or intuitive on that test. And because of that, then those people see themselves as reference points for the type. And then it causes that person to uncalibrate the other person around them. And then it causes a cycle of miscalibration. And so, yeah.
I'm going to say, I think one of the things that especially a lot of the newer people into MBTI, especially, you know, if it's your first few months, they're going to see that J at the end of the letter code and think that INTJs are pretty judgmental. They're like harsh. When in reality, as perceiving dominant types, I think we're a lot more relaxed than we come off as. Most INTJs I know will happily entertain, you know, a small conversation with you. They're not going to be too harsh on you. They may offer their opinions or advice. They may tell you that you should do something if you want to succeed, but they're not going to be nearly as like pushy as most ENTJs. And I think that most INTJs aren't actually as judgmental as the type code may suggest.
Yeah. As well, to add, I think there are some INTJs who are more in touch with their introverted feeling than what the stereotypes suggest. So, yeah. While INTJs may appear more stoic on the front, like Michael with his INTJ death stare, they still have a level of awareness of their own emotion. Even if they're able to put it aside to get the job done, there is some connection there. For some INTJs. But yeah, anyone want to add to that?
I feel like when I go through some of the memes online, I see this, some of the strengths of INTJs. Maybe not everyone would call them strengths, but some of the strengths of being calculating and planning and the mastermind and all those types of things. And even the ability to be a little dispassionate sometimes in executing a plan. But I don't see the weaknesses showing up very much, which is totally fine. I'm happy for the weaknesses not to be there. That's great. Great advertising for INTJs to not show the weaknesses. But sometimes I see some of the weaknesses coming out as strengths, like cold as a robot. And I'm like, cold as a rope? Like, no, no, my feelings are actually sometimes a problem in what I'm trying to execute. There's definitely sometimes a help, but I think sometimes the INTJ and the INTP, like you're saying, a lot of people type as IN types. Maybe some of the INTP stereotypes get kind of conflated with INTJ. And sometimes I feel like the coldness, the antisocialness of INTJs gets exaggerated just a little bit. Like Chris was saying, the judgmentalness. It's like, yeah, there's a judgmentalness there, but I think a lot of times the judgmentalness of the INTJ is we're judging the plan. We're judging, is that actually going to work or is that not going to work? We're not like diving into the person and being like, you're stupid or you're bad because I don't like your ideas. It's not a personal thing. It's we're looking at the idea or the plan or the future or the content of what the person is saying. Maybe we have a critique toward that, but it's usually not as personal, I think. And cold as it can come off.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And one thing I think that is a good way to like differentiate the INTJ and the INTP is INTPs tend to get really frustrated with the people, whereas INTJs get really frustrated with the plans that people make.
Yes.
A subtle difference there.
Yes. Yep. A subtle difference. And also I think if you get an INTJ in conversation long enough and let us talk enough or let us rant enough, it's going to be about like, but that's just not going to work, but it's going to be so stressful, but this chaos is going to come in and ruin everything. Like, I feel like SE as an inferior sometimes isn't understood so well. Like, why do we make all these plans? Why do we care so much about having everything like lined up? Why do we care so much about having a deep understanding of something? It's because we don't want something to come in and mess it up for us. And we don't want to have to deal with it in the moment and deal with all these surprises. So if that's the fear, it's not so much going to be, you get us talking, it's not going to be so much a rant about people just are so dumb. People are idiots. People don't understand. You know, I said it one time and they didn't get it, so I think they're stupid. That's not it at all. It is more about the plan and the fear, like the fear of the stress that's going to be coming down the line.
Yeah, and it's probably a little bit to do with energy management too, because like with Michael, a lot of INTJs are minutely tracking their energy down to the very minuscule. So if the plan goes wrong, then now you have to expend so much energy to fix the plan when it could have just went right the first time. And then you would have wasted a lot less energy on that. That's why a lot of INTJs aren't really fond of people who are drama causers, in the sense they like watching people who are dramatic, maybe for some of them, but they don't want overly dramatic, overly turbulent people in their life. And so they're like, ooh, INTJs can sometimes look at someone and see, oh, that person requires a lot of energy. That person comes with a lot of drama, like everything makes them upset. And INTJs notice this about people because of the energy management component to them, because they want to be smart with how they use their energy. With a lot of IJ types, sometimes, if I pause in between speech, I just get really nervous sometimes. I try to deal with my anxiety, but yeah.
What is it, Joyce, about the INTJs staring at you stoically that makes you nervous? I can't imagine.
Yeah, when I don't get positive feedback on people's faces, I start
to... Guys, smile. Hi, Joyce. She's doing awesome. Woo!
It's okay. The INTJs told me before that, you know, they're having a good time because they're thinking. And so that's the reassurance I should have. So I'll just take that. All right. One of the reasons also why INTJs like to plan is a lot of IJ types feel like they already know how something is go without experiencing it. So they're like, oh, I can form a plan. I already have all the known information or that you know enough to make the plan. So there's a little bit of this, I don't need to experience to know it. And so you can just formulate the plan.
I think that's true. I don't know if it's like, haha, we don't even have to know anything and we make the plan. It's just something that we naturally do. If there's something, at least for me, if there's something coming up and I don't know what it's going to be like yet, it's like I almost can't stop myself from making up something that I think it's going to be like, so that I can start planning around it, so that I make up a picture of the hotel I'm going to stay at with my family, or I make up what my daughter's graduation ceremony is going to be like, even though I really have no idea. I've never been through it before, but it's like my mind creates that so that I can start going through the scenarios and planning what time to get there and where am I going to sit and is it going to be in the rain? And so what am I going to wear if it's rainy? Am I going to bring a coat? Are we going to bring umbrellas? Are they going to move it inside? Like, I'm thinking about all these things to try to figure out what's probably going to happen so that I can make a plan around it. So bringing that back maybe to stereotypes online that we can sometimes see. I was just for the fun of it to try to prepare for this. I was like looking through Pinterest this morning and looking up INTJ memes or characteristics of INTJs and deciding, you know, which ones do I agree with and which ones don't feel true for me. I don't see as much as I want to be calm and I want to present as calm, underneath there, you could call it anxiety. I don't feel like I experience it as anxiety, but it is a little, maybe you could call it that wants to prepare things. It's the anxiety about what if it does start raining in the middle of the ceremony and I don't know, so that's going to cause a big disruption. That's going to cause something bad. So I'm trying to plan ahead for that. And there's that anxiety that's causing the planning to happen. And I feel like on the outside, what it's going to look like is me showing up at the graduation ceremony with a coat, a backup coat in the car, backup coats for all my kids in the car, an umbrella. Which umbrella? Well, if I don't have the right kind of umbrella, I better get the right kind of umbrella. Like, I'm already planning all this stuff ahead of time. So when we get there, I'll look totally calm and stoic. And when the people are like, oh my gosh, we forgot an umbrella. Ah, it's raining. Ah, and causing chaos. I'm going to be standing there all prepared. So it looks like I have no anxiety. But it's just the anxiety came beforehand. The anxiety came when I'm like planning it out. So therefore, it doesn't have to be anxiety when I'm there with all the people and all the other chaos that's happening.
Yeah. So that's the paradox of IJs, is because they've planned beforehand, they can actually look pretty calm as they're implementing the plan, as long as the plan goes according to plan. Whereas other types can relate to having plans, but in different ways. So for the EP types, some EPs might even say that they plan, but the way that they plan is so different. It's like it doesn't come easily to them. And when they do it, they're stressed as they're planning. So sometimes it's quite ironic that you'll see the INTJ being fully prepared when they do the plan. So it looks more calm when they're executing, unless they need to control other people to adhere to the plan. But otherwise, the most stressed types that I find when it comes to plans is EP types who see themselves as planners, who it doesn't come naturally. So they get all wound up and then they get stressed about things that the IJ is like, you don't actually have to stress about that. If you stress now, you actually have way more time to do it than you think you do. But then like the EP type miscalculates time management. So they're more, they over-focus on the plan, but they do it in a way where they know that if they don't over-focus on it, then it'll fall through the cracks. Whereas the IJ knows they already thought about the plan so much, when it's actually implemented, they can be calmer than an EP type that has planned. Anyways, that's advanced, but I'm just trying to illustrate how some people can relate to INTJ stereotypes and not actually be an INTJ, because the way they plan is not how an INTJ would plan through something.
So much of the planning, I think, for if it's your driver, like your dominant function, it's so unconscious a lot of times. That I mean, I'm using my daughter's graduation as an example, but I really don't sit down and think, all right, my daughter's graduation, I'm going to write out all the sensory details and make a list of what we need. And that's not really how it goes. It's just my mind just goes there. I see on the calendar graduation June 3rd, and my mind goes and it does it without me even trying. So yeah, I think if you are, let's say, an ESFP and you're going to your inferior function and thinking through and having to do that, you could feel like, yep, look at me, I'm using NI. NI is my most important function. Look at how much I'm doing it. And the INTJ might kind of shrug it off, like, of course I'm doing that. So yeah, I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah. And I think to jump on that point, it's not something that I feel like I turn on and off, right? It's just something that's always going on in the background. So there's no sitting down and saying, this is the time to plan this. So if I have a plan for something and it looks like, you know, it might seem early in the process, or it's just a plan that I spontaneously have, it's only because those gears have always been turning along the way. And I think there's another thing about this is, since that's always happening, there's always this huge list of things that I'm working on or going to be working on. That's always, you know, there's always like a meta plan that I have. And so when, for example, if I meet somebody who I know is going to be involved in something I'll be doing a couple months from now, that's unrelated, but that will, you know, start a gear turning, saying, you know, this person maybe has a big personality and is going to could pose X, Y, and Z problems in this thing that's happening in the future. And then that's sort of a contingency that you plan for. So those plans, those are always being developed and changing, and you know, it's just something that's just always humming along in the background, I think. And it can make you a neurotic person too, if that, I think, with, you know, especially if something goes wrong, but hopefully you plan for those contingencies, right?
Yeah. And so because INTJs naturally understand plans in such a dynamic way, because the higher up a function is, the more sophisticated it is. It just comes so naturally. It's like breathing. And so it's interesting, if you get an INTJ and EP types together, so this would be the ENFP or ESTP, let's say, the EPs will describe the INTJ as limiting the fun, but then they realize the INTJ is right. And then they're like, we should have considered the thing that the INTJ considered. Yep. And so it's interesting. I did that to illustrate the differences between EPs and IJs, because a lot of EPs sometimes think they're IJs for some weird reason, and it happens. But one of the huge things is some of them are so far looking that they can be seen by the EPs as limiting the fun, because EPs like to focus on the fun factor until everyone inevitably finds out the INTJ is right about the Cassandra effect, like where the Titanic was going to hit the iceberg. They already knew. And then finally people find out afterwards. All right, but Chris?
I was just going to bounce off of their points where they were talking about how planning comes naturally. And to some people, it may appear like the INTJ isn't even really planning. Because like, there's been so many times in my life, it actually frustrates my wife to no end. I'll respond to her like trying to think through a problem by going, it'll all work out. And because in my mind, I'm such a planner that like I've already thought through the possibilities, narrowed them down. And it's like, no matter what happens, it's going to be fine. And I may not have it all written down on a piece of paper, but she's sitting there trying to verbalize all of her planning. She needs to come to something figured out. And I'm just like, yeah, it'll be fine. Like, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it.
Yeah. And one thing that I've started noticing in myself, this didn't used to be conscious for me. I used to just think other people were being irritating, but I've figured out lately when people question me on the plan or act like I didn't already have a plan, that's when I get really irritated. So for example, the other day I was driving somewhere in the car with my kids, and one of my kids was like, Mom, aren't we going this way? And I was like, why on earth would you think that I didn't know which way I was going? If I didn't know which way I was going, I would have asked which way to go. But of course I know which way I'm going. Of course I already had a plan. And I mean, it's such a silly thing that would trigger me. And they can do all kinds of other things, all my kids in the car at the same time, that are annoying and that might trigger somebody else, that I just shrug and laugh along. But when they question my plan, it feels like, why are you getting involved in my business? The plan is my business and it's introverted. I planned it. I narrowed it down. I don't feel the need to share all the details with somebody else. Like Chris is saying, with his wife, we had the same conversation, maybe types of conversations in our house, of my husband, who's an ESFJ, and he's like, all right, what's the plan for today? And I want to just say, like, the plan for today is, I've already got the plan for today. We're just gonna get the house clean today. And he's like, but what are the things on the list? Let's plan it together. And I feel like, let's not plan it together. I already have the plan. The plan is already there, and I already know kind of the order and basically the structure of how I want it to be. But it doesn't feel like it's a real collaborative process where I want to tell everyone and lay out the plan, because it's almost like once it's laid out there or I put it in the sensory world, someone's going to jump in and try to mess it up. And I don't want them to jump in and mess it up. I want the plan to be inside my head. And then I just want to execute it. So I can see how that could be maybe frustrating for the people around me sometimes.
Yeah. And I think that also goes back to the energy management, because I think an INTJ subconsciously knows if they vocalize their plan, then they have to answer every question about every little detail about the plan. And that's like, it's unnecessary because that wouldn't change how the plan is unfolding. So it's just a waste of energy to go through that. And the NI knows what's relevant to share. Sometimes it undershares. So it's like, oh, I actually didn't tell you enough about the plan. Now I'm, okay.
or it would change how the plan's unfolding. Or I've already got a plan and someone's like, no, let's do it this way. And I'm like, no, you don't know how long I've been working on this. I've been thinking about this plan for weeks and you just jumped in with this brand new idea in the moment. Like, please, no, I've already got it. I don't, once you mess up step 27, it's going to mess up all the next 500 steps too. So I don't want you to jump in and mess with it.
I also feel like INTJs want the autonomy to be able to change their own plans on the fly, which is why they don't like sharing it. Because as you mentioned, once you share it, then other people can start making changes. But then it also becomes solidified. It becomes, this is the plan. Whereas for me, it's like, no, if I have a plan, I recognize that I may want to divert to, because I've noticed a more efficient, like step 17. If you want to compare and contrast like an ISTJ's thought process is if you imagine like you have a color by number paint book, if you color by all the numbers and follow the steps, you'll have a beautiful painting at the end. Whereas for an INTJ, it's like, no, I recognize that I can switch some things around and maybe get to the outcome in a different way. I'm following a plan. It's just not going to be necessarily such a strict process.
Yeah, the plan is kind of a concept. And I understand the concept of what's supposed to happen. When I say we're going to have the house clean by the end of the day, I have a concept of what it looks like for us to have a clean house. But it's not laid out in steps. And yes, I might change it partway through. Or at least I want the freedom to change it partway through based on whether the thing happening fits into my concept or not. But it's not so well communicated like a process, like an SI Dom, for example, would be able to communicate it or enjoy communicating it for sure.
And I think something that comes out in all of the conversation here is we tend to be pretty confident in our plans, except those times when I'm not, where I actually don't know what to do, which does happen. In those cases, I will say, I actually don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know what to do here. I need help with this because I'm missing some piece of information, or I just don't have some experience that's necessary to pull something together. But in the other cases, when I am confident in the plan, I tend to say, trust me a lot and not want to get into the details of something because of all the reasons that we've gone over. There's a lot of just trust me on this.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great point, Michael. I know growing up, I was always confused because I had a grandfather. He was an STJ of some sort. I don't know what he was, but he would refuse to ask for directions or help from anyone. And it always just confused me because it was like, to me, it's like the most efficient thing to just be like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, can you just tell me what to do, or like give me some insight or in the basic direction, and then I can figure it out from there. I don't want to be stuck in a place where I have no plan. I mean, I quickly want to get out of that position if I can.
Yeah, that's the tell of an INTJ. Not having a plan makes them uncomfortable. So they're going to formulate a plan, even if like it's a conceptual plan, but still at the end of the day, it's kind of like you need a plan as at least a filler in your mind. So there's something there. And so the other ways in which I see INTJs maybe not relating to the stereotypes or maybe not relating to being an INTJ is sometimes INTJ is really put on a pedestal sometimes. And if someone is a humbler INTJ, they may not see themselves as the grandiose version of INTJs online because they're like, oh, I'm not like this grandiose human being that I see online. So it's interesting. Sometimes INTJs don't see themselves as INTJs because of how they view themselves. So they may actually be strategic, but they may not relate to the overly stereotyped strategic INTJ. But if you actually ask people in their lives, they actually do seem strategic. So it could be a matter of how they perceive themselves too, is in a little bit of a humbler way. And yeah, any other thoughts on INTJ misunderstandings in the community?
Going back to that for a second, Joyce, did you say grandiose? I'm not sure what or just more of a strategic, like the mastermind kind of stereotype.
Yeah. I think because INTJs are described as the mastermind, if an INTJ doesn't view themselves as a mastermind, they may not see themselves as an INTJ, even if they are an INTJ and they are strategic and they are a mastermind to other people's eyes. They may not recognize that they have the traits of a mastermind because it sounds like a really big title.
Well, I just think that mastermind is just a term that I'm not comfortable with, because that does sound grandiose, right? I just feel like that's not, yeah.
All the types have that one name that just kind of like super hypes them up, and I do think that mastermind overdoes it a little with the INTJ. I think probably something closer to maybe like visionary is a little more like a step down, where it's still positive but also not like you're in that range of controlling.
I mean, I wonder too, at least for myself, like if mastermind, if it has anything to do with like masterminding something for a whole huge group of people, that feels intimidating. I feel like I'm a mastermind for my own life, for planning my own path, for the things that are under my stewardship. But it doesn't feel like I'm a mastermind for in a huge global way. And I'm sure there are some INTJs, maybe they are. But that could be another reason maybe an INTJ wouldn't resonate with the type, is if they're thinking, oh, mastermind, like I'm masterminding my whole multi-million dollar business into going in this amazing direction. Like maybe we're just masterminding like getting the house clean on a Saturday, or maybe we're masterminding our next vacation. But it's not necessarily grand. It's just the everyday things that we do that we're planning. You can call it masterminding, but that's all it is.
Yeah, it sounds a little sinister to me. I think it's just what it is with mastermind. It just makes me think of like Machiavellian kind of scheming, right? Which is when that happens, I think those are cases where it's either too much feeling or too little when you fall into those kinds of schemes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I find that when INTJs mastermind for people, they want to have the secondary leadership role. So they're not the person who's interacting with all the people. They're the person who's pulling the puppet strings, making things go a certain way according to plan, but not having to deal with people, because it's energy draining to deal with so many people for some INTJs. All right. So really great thoughts, INTJs. So I'm wondering, how do INTJs feel misunderstood in their day-to-day lives? So in what ways are you guys misinterpreted in a way that's not true, or just feel misunderstood, or relate to the concept of being misunderstood on a day-to-day basis?
I'd say for me, I don't know if misunderstood is the correct word. For me, I've always just felt like there was like a sense of difference between me and those around me. And that was a feeling I always had strongly growing up, like hanging out with peers, being in school. I always felt like one step removed. Like there was just like, I saw the world in a slightly different way, maybe not a better way, not a worse way. It just felt like I had a different perspective. And because of that, I found that I didn't really like put myself out there very often. So instead of being misunderstood, it's more like having my own perspective and being on my own. And maybe that leads to other people not understanding how the INTJ thinks or feels about situations, because they're never putting themselves out there to be misunderstood in the first place.
Yeah, and you highlight the element of feeling fundamentally different than other people that some intuitive types feel, because of just you're different than most of the population too. And you don't exactly know why if you don't know about type, but you already know that you're fundamentally different in some sort of way. In the way that you perceive and take in information, it's the filter for that is different than for other people.
I guess another way that I've felt like I've been misunderstood before is the confidence, like the level of confidence. I do feel like I have confidence in certain little areas, confidence, for example, in the planning, and certain areas that I get very skilled on. But also, it can sort of, Chris was alluding to this earlier, saying this earlier, that it can look like I'm not open to feedback, or that I guess I just did say that earlier, that I don't like it when I'm laying out a plan and people are like, what about this? What about this? What about that? But definitely if it's offered in a in a gentle way, and it's not offered too close to the moment of when I need the feedback. Like, I feel like I actually am open. I need more information. I want to understand other points of view. I want to understand other people. And maybe with the like intimidating stare and the looking like you have it all together because your plans are set, it can look like, therefore, I'm not open-minded to things. And the truth is, I am. I'm just not open-minded to them at the last minute when you're throwing them at me right when we're about to start doing something important. So a misunderstanding. Oh, Melissa, she's just so rigid. She just won't change a thing. She won't take in any new information ever. It's that I would say that's pretty true if it's in the moment and I've already planned everything out and put so much energy and time into something, I'm not going to be very open. But if it's like in a little while, if it's for a plan that's in a week or two or three, and someone wants to say, by the way, you didn't realize this or you didn't see that, I'm much more open to it then. And I do want to hear and I do want to know and understand.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it might be the confident TE voice. Like a lot of TJs, they speak very confidently. And so people don't go against what the TJ says, or they feel like they can't, because it's just the vocal tone. It sounds confident even when you're open to more feedback.
Yeah, I'm definitely the kind of person who I'll like say something with authority, but immediately after I recognize that it's not right, I'll retract that and be like, oh, I was wrong. But like up until that point, I think that's just the TE, where it's kind of like we have to enforce what we know to be objectively correct at the moment. And then when we find something better, we toss it out and then use the new thing.
Yeah, I personally have no pride when it comes to just saying I'm wrong about something or changing my opinion on something based on new information. I've never, when someone comes to me and says, no, you're wrong about this and here's why, and it's true, then I will concede fully to that person, right? That actually, yeah, that is a better idea, or I was incorrect about something. I've been called unapproachable for another topic. And I think it's a lot of, I'm typically wrapped up in something and I'm not just minding the world around me. And one thing I had to recognize and come to terms with is I won't even know if I'm, because there are times when I'm frustrated and stressed out and I don't necessarily know it because I'm just trying to work through the things that are causing that. So I've had to start to mind, like I even feel right now, because I've got a really busy afternoon and evening today, and like my neck is tense and I always have an eye out for these kinds of things. And when I start feeling that, I'm going to go off camera for a second, cause I need to shake it out a little bit. It has nothing to do with this conversation, but, I think I do tend to get very wrapped up in whatever I'm working on and very focused on something disregarding the world around me, or even how I'm doing, especially when things get really busy and hectic.
Yeah, it's kind of as Melissa said earlier, it's almost like they're like INTJs are like pre-processing the anxiety and stress of doing something. So when they get to doing it, that's when they're neutral. I know for me, like I had a job interview this morning, and I know last night I had like four dreams about job interviews. And it's just like all that like stress, anxiety is beforehand. And then I got in the interview and I was perfectly fine, happy, no struggle, no stress, anxiety, anything.
I've never thought about that. That's 100% true. Yeah. Pre-processing anxiety.
Yeah. I think it also has to do with TE wanting to look professional in the moment when you're actually in the doing the thing, because you want to look like a good resource. So you want to pre-process all of that emotion beforehand. So when you're in the moment, other people see you as a competent resource, so that you're being more neutral on the surface and not being an emotional mess, because you don't want to be seen as an untrustable resource. So it's all pre-processed beforehand or after if you need any processing.
I think that's extremely true. Like for me, the thought of showing up somewhere unprepared and looking like a mess, like I have a very hard time even even imagining that. It's just not, yeah, it's just not part of who I am. Like, I might even make myself, I mean, I think I cause messes all the time because I am so focused on the one thing that I'm focused on. And while I'm focused on that, maybe the mail is building up and the car needs a repair and the taxes aren't getting done. And there's all kinds of other things happening in the background because I'm preparing so much for that thing, like the job interview, the graduation, the piano performance I'm doing, whatever it is, I'm nonstop thinking about that. And so some of the other things fall by the wayside. But for sure, when it's time to perform, hopefully I will look like a good resource and I will be a good resource. I'll do a good job of the thing I was going to do because I've prepared for it. I'm calm, I'm steady, I'm reliable, all of those things. But maybe in the background, there could be a lot of other crazy things happening. And as soon as that thing's done, I have to turn over and tend to those other crazy things that were building up because I was so focused on the one thing.
That highlights the IJ tendency to focus on a certain perception. So planning around a certain perception, and then as an NI dominant, or even SI dominants do this too. It's like you focus in on one perception and prepare for it so much. The other ones you may not see as important, so you may let it fall to the wayside. Whereas other types are less extreme with the certain perception that they choose to fixate on.
I think I have another one. It's you brought it up when you talked about being like not being fun or limiting the fun for some of the other, maybe the EPs or some of the other types. And it always feels to me like, well, someone has to think about all these things, and it just ends up being me all the time. Like, I think it's a misperception that we don't want to have fun too. I do want to have fun, but only after everything's lined up, only after everything's prepared. Otherwise it isn't fun for me. If there's a whole bunch of like loose ends that I can see coming down the line, like we go to the beach and we all run around in the sand and I'm talking as a mother of four, I keep doing that, but like the kids all get sunburned and they got sand between their toes. And, you know, I got a little bit sunburned and I'm tired and we don't have anything to eat. All that, to me, that's not fun. Like while it's happening and the kids are running free and the breeze is blowing, I'm thinking, okay, but where are we going to go for dinner? Where are we going to go for dinner that it's going to be okay that the kids are a little bit sandy? Do we have the talcum powder in the van to get the sand off of their little feet so that they can put their socks on and not get blisters from the sand? Like I'm the one thinking about all those things so that maybe the other people can have fun. And then they're like, Mommy, why aren't you having fun too? And I'm like, well, I want to have fun. Just let me get all these other things figured out. Let me get all the other things in a row so that there isn't a huge blow up later on. In the middle of the restaurant because someone's hot and sunburned and has sand all over and they won't let us in and we're never going to get to eat and all these bad things are going to happen. So it's not like, oh, there's no fun in me whatsoever. And I think that could be a perception, but it's like, no, there is fun inside of there. It's just the plan has to be in place first so that the fun can happen so that I can join in the fun too. Because even if the people around me are having fun, if there isn't something in place to make sure that that didn't mess up the future, then I'm not having fun.
You can kind of compare the loose ends that you don't completely have closure for as potential ticking time bombs. You already know if that's not sorted out, then you're essentially leaving a ticking time bomb just there and trying to have fun. It's like, you literally, this will blow up if nobody deals with it. So I guess it has to be factored in to be relaxed. Cause it's like, it's either like what Chris said, you've looked at the options and you know any route will be perfectly fine, as in like you've considered everything. And so you know that all the outcomes that are in your mind are ones that you're okay with. Whereas on the other hand of it, if you know that there's a ticking time bomb, you know that there's a ticking time bomb because the plan is so clear to you. So you're like, clearly that's going to blow up. But it's always on your radar. So it's like, great, I'm just going to try to have fun while there's this ticking time bomb that is for sure inevitable unless someone deals with it. Because it's kind of like in the plan, you know, things are inevitable down the road. And so it's like, it's either someone's got to tackle the inevitable or we're just going to watch the inevitable blow up in everyone's faces. And I already knew it was going to happen. If I knew it was going to happen, then why didn't I do something to prevent that?
I'll say, kind of jumping off on that, one thing that will cause a lot, that'll raise a lot of anxiety in me, is those times when things are so hectic that I just don't have an eye on everything that I need to have an eye on. And there's, you know, messages piling up and I don't know what's in all of them, and things get disorganized. And those times when that, there's always a little bit of that if you know, things are busy, but when things get extremely hectic, I get wound pretty tight. I don't know what's in there. And if am I missing something that needs to be done and it's not going to get done. At the same time, if I see someone miss a deadline and it just causes this cascading, you know, series of things that go wrong after that, then, you know, those are the things. It's better to avoid those things. But I can get at those times. And right now is one of those times where, like, I don't know what's in my inbox right now. And I can't, like, I keep thinking about it that, you know, I really need to, there's other things I need to do today, but I would feel so much better if I just, you know, if I have enough time to at least know what's there.
I mean, on the way to driving the kids to school today, I would never do this on purpose, trust me. I accidentally pushed the voicemail button on my phone and it said, "You have 14 messages," and started back like in January and went through all these doctor appointments, reminders. And one of the time it was my mom and she had high blood pressure. I didn't even know all these different things that were piling up. And it's just like, on a day-to-day basis, I see you have a new message. And it's like, I can't take in that information. I have too much other stuff. I have a track that I'm going down in my mind, and that information is like bugging me. Like, I feel it knocking at the door and it's like in the background, like causing anxiety, but I just can't look at it then. I just can't. I feel it building up, but I just can't take in something new while I'm so focused on what I'm focusing on. So it does create like an anxiety. I relate to that. Like, am I missing something? Well, probably I am missing something, because I don't want to look, but because I'm so busy thinking about something else. So it's like low level constant stress because of that.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is I also don't want to look, like you said, like, right, at those times, like, I don't want to look, because a lot of times there's one or two things that I'm very focused on. I just need to get these things done. Sometimes when it's a real just albatross that I need to just get through this so that's not in my face anymore. And I don't want to look at anything that's going to throw my mind off of, you know, on 12 different tracks, you know, but then things pile up and that's where it becomes a cycle, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So there is that missing information that can feel chaotic at times. I could see how the built up chaos could be a little bothersome. It's like, oh, I have all these voice messages, then they could possibly contain something important. And then I might cause more chaos for me. And then it goes back to energy. Then how am I going to manage my energy to be efficient with it? And so what other areas are INTJs misunderstood?
I wanted to bounce back to one that we were talking about a few topics ago, which was the idea of fun. I think it's if you want to make an INTJ feel understood, don't assume your fun is their fun. Because I think that was one of the largest issues I had growing up, is especially with like adults. They would treat me like, oh, you're a 10-year-old. You must enjoy soccer. So we're going to sign you up for soccer against your will. And it's like, but all kids love soccer. Why won't you, like, why aren't you having fun playing soccer? And it's just like that repeatedly throughout the young INTJ's life is, I think, what drives them further and further away from wanting to be included in other people's activities and other people's groups, is because they're getting this constant feeling of like, no one's respecting what I think is fun. No one's respecting what I want to do with my spare time. So why bother interacting with other people in the first place?
Yeah, that's a really good point, to figure out what the INTJ considers to be fun, or what the INTJ would like or enjoy, because it may not be what the typical person enjoys. And so there can be that area of feeling misunderstood. And so, yeah. And that can also create the INTJ wanting to manage their energy even more, because it's like, people want me to play soccer, but I don't want to. This makes me more careful about my energy.
And it's not like, you know, INTJs won't compromise sometimes. Like, sure, I like to go out the bar with some friends sometimes, but that's something that's kind of draining for me. But it's like, you just have to recognize that if you want the INTJ to repeatedly be doing these things, that's what's going to make them feel misunderstood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. And so thank you everyone for coming out today and discussing the ways that INTJs are misunderstood. So it seems like INTJs aren't natural planners, but they do it at every moment of every second of every day. They don't even realize that they do it. And in a way it's flexible too, because it's a conceptual plan as well. So you may flex it in order to make the end picture work out, but the little steps in between you're willing to adjust, as long as the end picture is the way that you desire it to be, like the thing that you're aiming to achieve. The chaos of the world can be draining. That's why INTJs want to be prepared up front, and also for other reasons too. So one of the things that also showed up in the conversation too was, for some INTJs, especially if they're male INTJs, can come across as unapproachable. But even in terms of critiquing the planner or asking certain questions about the plan, I guess people are also like, they might not view the INTJ as open-minded as they actually are, because INTJs might speak with authority in a way where other people are like, oh, they must be very sure, so they must not want to hear anything else, but they do. And so that's one of the areas they feel misunderstood, and many other elements that we discussed today. So thanks for coming out. Feel free to check out Azure Psych, his YouTube channel. And also, Melissa is a part of Personality Hacker, so feel free to check out PH. It is a really great organization with an amazing community and a very great head profiler. So thank you, Melissa, for being my sensei and teacher in typology and for coming out today.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Michael doesn't like compliments, but... Hi, Michael. I'll nod to you. And so thank you everyone for coming out. I'll see you all in the next episode. Take care. Bye.
Thank you.